This is the 24th of August, 1980, Taos, New Mexico, and we're having a session with Bartholomew. Good morning, Bartholomew.
Good morning. I'm very pleased that there has been a question raised from last week's statement, because it then indicates that it was a meaningful statement to many people, and therefore we will follow up. Had there been no following questions, I would have dropped it, as I have many other statements. The question that was raised was, could there be further clarification on the statement that you were all living each other's lives? And the question was, well, if that is so, and if person A has arthritis, then person B should also have arthritis. Let me explain what I mean. Every entity alive on the earth plane is participating in one life. You, because you are looking through the prism of your individualized senses, perceive separation. Once that veil, that net, that webbing of separation falls, you will perceive only open oneness. Now, you see first that there are people, and then you say that those people have different things within them, positive and negative, illness and health, beauty and ugliness, whatever. Postulate all the opposites. My view is that there is no separation between person A and person B. What we can only say is, in the ego motion on the earth plane, various things are present. When I tell you that you are living this gentleman's life, I mean exactly that. That not that you are a duplicate of him, not that everything that he has in him, you have in you. That isn't what I mean. What I mean is that that which is you, that is vaster than the separation, is constantly aware of participating in, on one level, all of the life that is going on at the same time. Literally, when you drop the veil, my friends, you are going to see only this oneness. There will be no other. There will be not him and me. There is only one, and it doesn't have a him and me. It doesn't have a he, she, or it. It is just a beingness. I mean absolutely literally that you are participating in his life. Now, how can you prove such an outrageous statement? The deeper that you go into your awareness, the deeper that you go into your being, you are going to find rising up a sense of extension. When I say that the divine is extending, that's precisely what I mean. And the other problem is that the ego also extends in not a divine extension, but in a projection. All right. So when you get deeper and deeper into your being, you are going to sense that part of your being that I will call the ego. All right. And when you finally get in touch with it, you are going to see its face everywhere. I have told you before, and nobody really likes to believe me, if you have a problem outside, it is your problem. If you perceive a problem out there, if you don't like someone and you see it out there, you say it's their problem, and I say it is your problem, because you are that person. You are that other person. There are not two people. You with your set of problems, him with his set of problems, her with her set of problems. You have divided it that way because you don't want all these problems. You like to see yourself as not having problems. You like to see other people having problems. Oh, it's not my problem. It's his problem. This keeps you with the wonderful sense of your person being above it all. You remember, I go back to what I've said about ego. Ego wants to be omniscient and omnipresent, never wrong, always right, always justifiable. Everything you do has to have a justification. That is a hallmark of the presence of ego. If you ever say, I know, then you know who's present. And if you ever say to somebody else, you're stupid, that's silly, that's wrong, be aware who's present. Divine action is not present. Ego is present. If you use these words, if you use judgmental thoughts, if you use judgmental ideas and give verbalization or just mentalization to them, understand one thing clearly, ego is present. Absolutely present. what the divine avatars know that you do not know. And the only difference here is that the avatar has seen all of the webs and all of the lines have dissolved, and there's nothing but oneness. And he or she, in their wondrous openness, cannot see, postulate you and me. They cannot postulate. They do not talk in terms of you and me. They are forced to because the language makes it thus. But this doesn't mean that this would be their choice. But the human entity always postulates you and me. And therefore, out of me, there arises the need for you. And then the whole game and all of the rounds of all of the millions has begun. But when the great ones say, go back the way you came and find the source of the first I thought. Remember this? The source of the first I thought. The minute the I thought was born, the worlds were born. The minute the first separation began in your mind, you saw everybody else. It isn't that you first saw two, and then you saw three, and then you saw four. The minute the I thought that I am, meaning I am a separate entity, then the vision changed, and you became very web-like in your perceptions of the world, and it fell across the world like a shroud. And it is through that webbing that you're trying to see. And the problem with ego webbing is if you touch it in one spot, the whole thing begins to vibrate. And it vibrates so fast that you cannot see through that vibration of web ego into a clarified world. The world beyond that webbing sits beautiful, clear, one, a light, alive, wondrous. But your webbing, do you understand what I'm saying? The webbing is your problem. It is not the world, it is you. When the webbing has either stilled itself through meditation or dropped through enlightenment, then you see that that energy that you thought was so separate, this is where I hope to answer your question, that energy that you thought was so separate, that was your own little self, now has extended outward, and you see that everyone's problem is your own. The great poets have stated it. Ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. What does this mean? That you're going to die sometime? No! A part of the oneness has gone into another state. A part of you has gone into another state. If someone comes to me and is full of pain and suffering, the same moment I can see pain and suffering, I know that they are also participating in the health of someone else. Now, why then do some people manifest health and some people manifest illness? I think this is a question. Mm-hmm. All right. If your belief system includes the idea that illness is in any way a defensive tool to ensure you a degree of separateness, then you will use it. Did you hear me? If your belief system in any way holds the idea that illness is a tool to increase and defend and support your idea of separateness, then you will use it. Because it is very obvious to look around and say, I am well, she is not well. So I can't be her, because I'm well. Do you understand? Now, the ego keeps throwing this gray, netting, webbing across, and it is only ego. And it sees that you are very tightly encased in that grayness and will not allow you out. And why do I cry for meditation? Because in the throes of meditation, you are going to still the webbing sufficiently that you will begin to get glimpses through the holes. You understand? The web of the ego is not a solid block of granite. It is a webbing made up of mind and emotion, and it undulates. Good morning, and I'm very sorry. I would have been pleased to have had you both here. The webbing moves. And as you agitate the webbing, it moves more and more rapidly, more and more rapidly, more and more rapidly. And therefore, your vision is even more and more and more diminished because of the movements of this network. Do you understand? Through single-pointedness, let us use that word clearly, through single-pointedness, you will, as if you're taking a diamond drill, and you will start to drill a larger and larger hole in that webbing right before you. If you stay in the moment, an analogy might be that you were taking a diamond drill of wisdom and carving a larger and larger hole in your webbing so that your frame of reference will include only the clearness. And then the webbing itself, because you will no longer be agitating it, will drop into uselessness. If you want a definition of the ego, it is the emotions in the mind constantly undulating in this form before your vision that keeps you tightly enmeshed so you cannot see the oneness that stands behind that. When I say you are living all lives simultaneously, I mean precisely that. You are the life that is living every life. And I will tell you the sad part of this. For those of you who have feelings of superiority, feelings of anger at others, feelings of self-pity, feelings of whatever nature, you will never be free when one of these remains in your vision. Because the trap of it all is this. Until you know yourself to be each other person, not intellectually, but accept and embrace that that person is you, you can never be free. Because until you allow, as long as you have some forms out there that you will not let the divine energy flow into, you will have a wall. Do you understand me? If there's anyone in your life, past, present, anywhere, that you would not allow your being to flow into, you will never be free. And this is the part you don't like. You want to be free, but you do not want to accept all people. You say, well, give me freedom. Give me the vision. Then I will accept them. Unfortunately, the game doesn't work that way. And this is where, because you see, the ego continues to move in its dance before your eyes and keeps other people separate. No, I will accept everyone, but not this one. You can accept the billions of people. And if there is one that stands outside, that one is the one who will stand before you. And your feelings, not that person, but your feelings about that person, will keep you from freedom. Do you understand? When I say you have to give them all up, I mean you have to give them all up. And you say, how? How? I keep telling you that if you do your homework consistently, conscientiously, and even give some vague thought to the fact that when you see behavior in someone else that you do not approve of, it is your behavior that you are responding to. This will perhaps open up your vision. Find out what behavior you absolutely reject and why. And the why is the interesting part. You see, in each one of you, and this is where the sadness comes because you don't want to see, in each one of you, no matter how open and carefree you may be, in each one of you is a very definite belief structure of things that you would like to see yourself as, and things that you would not like to see yourself as. And the things that you want to see yourself as, you can identify with in other people and in yourself, and you embrace them. But then there's this dark list over here. Things in myself I do not want to identify with. And you say to me, I am not a drug addict. I know it. But when I see a drug addict, I respond. I have a negative feeling, and I say, well, it's because I have high vibrations, and my vibrations don't blend with nonsense. Nonsense. What it is the ego web moving that says, oh good, I am justified now in keeping this whole part of humanity outside of my being. And then there's a drug addict who has all of the, what is it called, the establishment outside of their web. You see, they will take all the drug addicts in, but they will keep the establishment out. And they see themselves as being very open because they're accepting all of these outrageous people with all this wonderful, carefree behavior. But on the other hand, you put a very straight, stern, and stuffy banker there, and their belief structure arises. Do you see, this is where the subtlety of it comes. And this is why I say, every one of you has a list. Look at your list. What are you keeping out? Until you can state with absolute desire, I wish to encompass in my being all of humanity, all, then you stand outside the gates and you cannot enter. And it is all of your preconceived hatreds, all of your preconceived prejudices, all of your preconceived I am better thans that is going to stand right there. This is why I don't approve of spirituality. Because spirituality excludes so many things, so many behavior patterns. Understand this. The only thing you're saying is, I'm excluding some behavior patterns. If I could only convince you, my friends, that the thing that you're excluding is nothing more than a behavior pattern. It isn't a living, dynamic, important thing. I keep telling you, the power of the ego has no power. It has a seeming power that is really false. When I tell you this, if you would only believe me, this would be your greatest step forward into freedom. Because if I tell you that the only thing that repulses you by other people is not any real thing, but simply a behavior pattern, a reaction to something, does not that change at all? But you see, you don't see it that way. You say, that person is, and then, boom, out comes the judgment. Is what? Is selfish. Is arrogant. Is mean. Is stingy. Is this. I mean, all along, I mean, whatever it is, you have all of your lines. Now, you say someone is arrogant, someone is stingy, and I say that is a word. I say that is just a word. It is a cover-up. It is a cover-up from one emotion only. And what is it? And well, you know it. It is fear. All of you are covering up to avoid fear. You can cover it up any way you want. If you can once get in your being the fact that every so-called negative energy pattern in the world is only fear crying out, this would change you from hostile beings to compassionate entities. Do you see the difference? If you only understood in your being that every negative response that comes from the world is not coming from deep and anger and hatred and evil and vipers in a pit, it is coming from anguish in the heart. Why do you suppose the great ones weep when they see their children? Why? Why do you suppose the Christ says, I will go after the most forlorn, the most wayward of my flock? Why? Because in that moment, they know absolutely that that wonder, that beingness that is so far lost at that moment is crying, help me, I am lost. I need you. Come and help me. And if you cannot enter into that love that sees everyone crying for your help, as not because you're wonderful, not because you're special, but just because you are a part of the oneness. If you cannot see that, then you cannot become a part. Do you understand? If you could only change your idea about where that negative business is coming from. Yes.
Is this the reason why we should open up when we feel negativity, aggressiveness, and so forth? We should open up instead of protecting ourselves the way we have been taught
this far
and see the divine instead of...
I understand you.
Things to appear.
All right. This is... entirely depends on what your goal is. If your goal is to maintain a high vibration around yourself, and if you want to keep yourself feeling good and happy and dynamic and so forth, if you want to do all of that, if you have a preconceived idea of what you want to do, then by all means protect yourself, put balls of light around you, do all of that, and it will work. If you want freedom, then you have to let it in. And those of you who are in jobs that do not allow this because it becomes precarious due to having to uphold other people and you feel their negativity and then you begin to participate in it, you have a choice. You either quit your job or you quit fighting for freedom. The choice is simple. Your life will tell you. Some of you are in jobs that are precarious. For example, one of my dear friends is a nurse. And she was stating to the woman just the other day that the difficulty with opening yourself up is that she became dizzy along with her patient. And therefore it became difficult because she couldn't hold up the patient. Then the question is she in the right field of employment? She will have to answer that for herself. I cannot. I can only tell you that when you start on the way for freedom, you have to keep analyzing your life. Is this an obstacle? Is the life that I have chosen an obstacle? And if so, then you have to be courageous enough to leave the life and go to a life that is not. And every one of you will come to a point in your life where you have to analyze deeply and clearly, is the life that I have chosen helping me or hindering me? And then you have to have the courage. This particular woman has a pattern of service in the nursing profession and now must make a choice. Can you put it all aside? Maybe not. And no blame, my friend. It doesn't matter. I'm not speaking just to you. Understand this. I know this. If you surrender your life deeply enough and strongly enough, if it is necessary that you move, your job will drop away. So that's the other thing. If you do not want to move into it because you're afraid it might be too soon and you're not quite clear, then all you do is just pray for a surrendered life, and then one day the head nurse or the administrator will come and say, I'm sorry, you're the low man on the totem pole and you're out, and so on. Or an argument will take place and you will decide to leave, or whatever. Somehow, if you have surrendered your life, it will manifest so that that position is no longer yours in one way or another. But we go back to the basic problem, which is a surrendered life, which is something you have to do every day. You do not surrender your life on Monday, July the 22nd, 1980, and forget about it. A surrendered life is something that happens every day of your life. So, I hope I answered the question. If you wish freedom, you can exclude nothing, no one, and no thing. If you wish your own safety, your own permanent little special safety, if you wish to keep yourself nicely cloistered and protected and not awash in all of the muck and mire that the earth plane has.
In going back to the question about working food of hell, I don't understand how, when we go to transition, will we blend in the vastness? It is all one piece human being. I have not seen it, I have sensed it, but a very close friend of mine has seen it, and even though she has reached a high degree of understanding, it brought her not to believe anymore in reincarnation. She could not see how there could be any survival of personality or whatever it is that survives.
Very good. All right, the other part of this, which I really hesitate to say, and which will really leave most people behind now, but I will go ahead since you've brought it. This is the thing that I am sure will leave some of you assured, if you hadn't thought so before, that I am indeed mad. But we will go ahead with it. Not only are you living everybody's lives that are living on the earth plane now, but you are living all past lives of your own and everyone else's, all present lives of everyone else's and your own included, and all so-called future lives of yourself and everyone present. I tell you this, there is no separation. There is no separation. There is no such thing as time. There is no such thing as time. It is a mental construction. I cannot talk about this because it makes no sense in the words in which you have handed us. But the fact remains that when you perceive, as she has perceived, that there could be no personality surviving, she has seen the truth. And this is why, in one sense, there is no such thing as reincarnation, if you mean one life continuing after another. Just as I tell you there are not separate lives on the earth, I now tell you something even more outrageous, which is that there's no such thing as one life after another. It is all simultaneously being done at one time by all beings there, and that is all that we can say about it. And you can say that throws everything into chaos. And I say, good. I'm delighted. If there's the slightest degree of chaos in your mind when you hear that statement, I'm glad. Your mind is not going to answer this problem. Your mind cannot grasp it because your mind is encompassed by a belief structure and you will not get out of it through your mind. And if you bang against this, let this be your koan, I think it's wonderful. Bang against it until your head collapses. You are living all lives, everyone's lives, past, present, and future, right now.
Well, then we have rich freedom.
You are free, my friend. You have always been free. You could never have been anything other than free. Don't you understand? It is just as if the wonderful white light of oneness has projected down into multitudinous rays The problem is that those multitudinous bands of light have forgotten that they are at the same time, not in a future time, my friend, and not in a past time, but right now, are participating in one vast life. You are all witnessing the whole thing. Why? Because you are all the white light out of which these strands have projected. Don't you see? Don't you see? You have identified with the strand, this lovely pink light that goes down into the many, many lifetimes down through. Do you see? Look at it that way. It projects out of the white crystal, and it goes down in multitudinous, and it has different forms and facets and lights and darks, and it changes and it undulates, and it goes deeply down. And you have identified with that strand. Now you tell me, let us take this strand. Let us call it you. It has gone through what you would call many lifetimes as it goes down. But please, my friend, if you were looking at that light from the white vastness, would you see separation, or would you just see one wonderful band of light? And at the same time, would you not see, if you were seeing from the white crystal and not from the multitudinous bands, would you not also see in vast and multitudinous splendor all the other lights doing their own wonderful radiating out? And would you then say that they were separate, or would you say they are simply radiating out and all, you can see them. When you look through a crystal, you see all the lights, the broken up, but you also see the crystal. The problem is, my friends, you have to go back the way you came, which is that you are identifying with those rays down at the bottom, and the closer to the white crystal you get, the more bold the color is and the less fragmented. Do you understand? You have fewer colors and you have fewer nuances. They're bolder. You have what would be called the primaries, or whatever those main seven, or I don't know how many you've got them broken up into, multitudes. But anyway, whatever they are. Do you see? And what your friend is experiencing is absolute truth. That there is no survival of personality. There is no survival of personality to reincarnate. The white crystal knows that, and rests solidly in its own knowingness. You, although you have chosen to take a part of your awareness, and listen carefully, a part of your awareness and project it out as a separated life, you are still participating in a vast amount of the life of the white crystal. You have not abandoned the white crystal. Does the white crystal disappear when these rays go through it? Does it in any way change? It stays the same. But you have identified. You have said, I will leave my awareness at that vast crystal point, and I will follow this one strand down, and I will call it me. But the fact remains that a vast part, and this is the only reason that you can go back the way you came, the vast part of your being rests wonderfully, wholly, and comfortably in the vast white crystal and continues its own awareness. Does that help you at all to understand?
Yes.
And if you could just tell her, I am very pleased, and that she is right, but that it is now necessary to drop all thought about these things and just participate in the being of what's happening. Do you understand? What is necessary now, if you are in a relationship that you can speak this way with her, no thoughts about it. Just say, ah, I see, I see. And just let them come and go and participate now in the quietude, and then the whole thing will become very clear. One has to stop thinking. I tell you, I throw these things out hoping that I will so coddle your brains that you will say, my brain is too little. I cannot comprehend what you have just said. And then you have two choices. You can call me mad and a fool and never come back, which is one option. Or you can say, well, based on past track record, maybe there's something there, maybe there isn't. If my track record with you is good, you will have confidence in me. And you will say, well, if that was true, maybe this is true. It sounds absolutely balderdash, but I will try it. I will try to encompass that kind of idea. Now, why is it helpful to encompass that idea? Because if you really begin to dwell upon that idea, your emotions are going to start to undergo a transformation. I have told you before, your mind builds mind is where it all begins. And if you begin to dwell on the idea that it is all one, that everything you see is you, not is some intellectual projection of you, but is you, that all past lives, all future, present lives are all you, when you start to stretch your mind like that, it's just like a giant that begins to awaken from slumber, and you begin to stretch your muscles, and you begin to stand up, and you begin to become more vast. And this very power of stretching is going to begin to have its effect on you. You cannot be so upset with someone else's emotional impact on you when you know that it is you. In fact, since you love yourself so much, you might even have compassion. Since you have to understand, you always have compassion for yourself. Make no mistake. You always have compassion for yourself. There is always an alibi for you. There is always an excuse. There is always a reason why you were outrageous when you were. I mean, you can take it back, as a psychiatrist would like to. You can go back to your birth. Oh, well, if that's not good enough, then you can go to a psychic and we can take you past your birth. We can go back to a past life. Oh, well, then there's the life before that. And you can go back and back and back. You can go back as far as you want. And I don't care. That's up to you. But the fact remains that you have a choice to make. You can either accept as a hypothesis that someone else is you, and thereby begin to free up all of this. Or you can keep yourself enclosed in your own separation. But the mere entertaining of the idea for just a few minutes a day, and more for those of you who are more courageous, will begin to stretch it, and stretch it, and stretch it. So I think we've probably discussed that enough, but I just wanted you to know that I throw these out to you now and again because I feel that it's very helpful for you to have some kind of a stretching device. The problem with the human entity, the greatest problem with the human entity, is that they think they know the answers. They think they have it figured out. And the fact is, my friend, it is so hopelessly immature, the vision that you have of yourself, the world, the universe, and the beyond. And the divine is so utterly different from the way you have projected it in your mind. Other people are so different from the way you see them. They are so totally different from what you perceive that I can only use shock tactics occasionally to throw these things out to try and shake the webbing of your constructs to such an extent that you might begin to make some changes. You are very satisfied. You are very satisfied. If you were not satisfied, you would be going insane. You see, one sign that you are really approaching the need for freedom is you might feel yourself going a little mad. If I tell you that everything you see is not as you see it, and you believe me, this should produce some kind of stress on your being, but it doesn't. I don't mean all of you, I just mean in general. It rarely does. I tell you, you are not who you think you are. You're someone entirely different. This should produce some stress in your being. This should produce great stress in your being. I am telling you, you are not who you think you are. Does this not produce any anxiety, any stress, any uncomfortableness? Instead, you just say, oh, ho-hum, what's for breakfast? And this is the kind of lethargy that entraps you because you are convinced that you know and you support each other in your system. It is the support system that the therapists are so touting as positive that I say is so terribly negative. With all due respect to, I don't mean to, perhaps that wasn't fair. But you see, a support system that greatly upholds all of your existing beliefs that somehow you have to adjust to this insanity is only, to me, helping you to adjust to insanity. And I say, wouldn't it be better to face the fact that you are insane? By that I mean you are in a state of observation of the world that is totally neurotic, totally individualized, and totally wrong, and that there is another view that is so totally open, free, unending and encompassing of all, that that would be a better place for you to fall into. I do not want your support systems to gather and help you. Not because I don't love you, but because I do love you. Someone greatly immersed in a support system isn't going to go anywhere. You will sit in a nest, surrounded with soft feathers, and forget that you're crying, and forget that you're screaming, because the nest is soft, and it protects you, and it keeps you safe. The first thing a mother bird does when its baby is ready is kick it off the nest, and there's no support system there. You use your wings or you fall. And if I have any job at all, it is that. Those of you who have courageously walked out of the nest and are standing on the edge, looking over and saying, oh my God, there's nothing down there to hold on. And it's my job as a representative of what they call the mother-father principle to kick you off. And I will do it. For those of you who that want it, I will do it. But I find a strange phenomenon. I kick and I find that you have said, kick me, but you're hanging on with claws of steel on the edge of that nest. And you're saying, I didn't mean it, I didn't mean it. And what is it that holds you back? It is fear of the space into which you're going to drop. And this is why I say again and yet again, the only way that you are going to develop enough fear, enough strength, enough courage to let go the nest is to know that the space that you are going to fall in will support your weight. And how do you find that out? Well, you know my answer. It's two-pronged. One, meditation. How many times do I have to say this? Meditation. Two, moment-to-moment awareness. Some way to unify yourself with that space in and out so that it becomes more of a home than your own body and your own mind and your own emotions. And when you have made that contact, then you have that inner courage and you will let go. But you cannot do it until then, and that is all it's all about. Some of you, this is why illumination can come overnight. In an instant, someone will sit and meditate and suddenly feel so secure in the presence of the space that they will let go. And it's done like that. And then there are others that sit on the edge for lifetimes, taking occasional peerings over and then coming back and then over and then back and then over and then back because they are afraid. And then I say to you, do you want to overcome your fear? Yes, yes. So I give you instructions. Do this, do this. Do you do it? No. Or if you do it, you do it when it pleases you. Or you do it when you have the time. Or you do it when you're not in a bad mood or when you're in a good mood. Or you go and you do this and you do that. You can always find an excuse. All I'm trying to give you is courage. Do you know that? That's all I am trying to give you. No teacher who really knows anything is trying to do anything but give you courage. And this is why, without exception, I do not approve of teachers who take your fear and magnify it and take your courage and diminish it. My hallmark for a true teacher is one who gives you courage and never takes away from your courage base. That is a true teacher. Because a true teacher knows that you have it within you to do it. A true teacher knows everyone has the ability. But what is lacking is the desire. Now, there are lots of people still in the nest who are curled up warm, snugly, and happy, and their eyes haven't even opened yet. And I can't talk to them. And it's not my business to talk to them. They're happy, safe, and secure, and so be it. It's well enough. It's hard enough to deal with the ones that are on the rim. If we get all of them out on the rim, what's going to happen? All right? So let's leave them. That's not our worry. My worry is those of you who are on the edge. And anyone who has spent enough time listening to all this gas on all these tapes is certainly on the edge. Is certainly on the edge. But what is lacking is the courage. I have only one job. To provide you with tools to give you courage. To let go. That is all. Nothing else. There are no magic buttons, and well, you know it. So either you choose to use the tools I have given at maximum. Put me to the test. Nothing I say should be believed. Swallowed like a vitamin. Test it. If the tools I give you bring you more courage, bring you more feeling that the goal is real, that the power is there, that you can somehow do this thing that you have set out in this lifetime to do. Test me. I'm not afraid of that. And if the tool is wanting, you come to me in outrage and say, I have given you this many years, months, whatever, and I have been arduous in my search, and it has not been productive. And I will meet you on that level, and we will talk. But so far, I have not found anyone who has tested the tools sufficiently to be in a position to make that statement. That is all I'm trying to do, is to give you courage. You do not have it. I'm trying to give it. There's a part of your being that has the courage. I'm trying to touch upon that part of you that is bold and courageous and dynamic and creative and bring that out into the foreground and blend into the background the fears and anxieties and feelings of self-pity and limitation that you have imposed on yourselves. But the problem is, one can only give tools, one cannot give you the desire to perform. That is left up to you. And this is where the discrepancy comes. If I have given a false tool, I will very, very happily discuss it, analyze it, and if it is true, accept the responsibility on whatever level I can for having administered a false tool. But I cannot do that until the tool has been used to such an extent that we know it is faulty. You see, as always, the responsibility lies with you. With all of my heart, I wish it were the other way around. But the fact remains that there is something that enthralls you about standing on the edge, or you would not be there. It is not uncomfortable enough yet. And now we slide into the next phase, which is, someone said to me with great indignation last week, but blessedly with great humor too, Bartholomew, ever since I have been listening and following what you've told me, my life hasn't gotten any better. It's gotten to be a real mess. And fortunately, the humor and the light and the sparkle was in the eyes. So we must deal with this. I have never promised you, nor will I now promise you, that following any of the paths that I have suggested to you are going to bring you instantly to nirvana, happiness, bliss, perfect joy, perfect harmony. Because there is that time, an interim period, which is long for some and short for others, when they look out on their world and they begin to see the weavings of the web of ego, which is mind and emotion, past, memory, so forth, undulating before their eyes. And for a while there, if we can take the analogy of the web a little further, the gray strands of the webbing are more predominant than the openings of vastness in between. And it is at this stage that the great difficulties arise. Do you understand? You see more of the ego rather than more of the space. And the reason for this is very simple. until you see what ego is, until you see it for what it is and how it plays and what its motives are, until you see that clearly, you will not turn away from it. Because the problem is that most of you have a very glorified idea that somehow the ego is a very ineffectual little thing, that at any time you wanted to, you could simply put a stop to it. The fact is, you are underestimating the power of your own projections. He who thinks that the ego is powerless is foolish. The great ones speak about battlefields when they speak of the war for freedom. It is often put into the phraseology of a battle. And why is that? Because it is a battle. You are literally being asked to do war with all of those ideas. And how do you battle them? By fighting them? No. By seeing them. By sitting courageously and looking. Every person in your life is part of you. And every antic, good or bad, that they perform is a part of you. And if you can hold that in your consciousness, you will become well aware of what ego is and how it plays, if you will just watch. Not as some above-it-all observer from the vast reaches of space, but knowing somehow within your being that this is a drama that you have willingly participated in and are now a part of, and you best look at it. You will not leave ego until you see it for what it is, because it holds an attraction. If we might talk in terms of alcoholism, because I think the analogy is rather good. An alcoholic usually begins their path of drinking because it gives them something. It gives them an uplift. It gives them fun. It's a great deal of joy. They enjoy it. They enjoy talking to others. They participate. Life becomes rosy. And then they become addicted to the idea that life becomes more rosy the more they're able to imbibe these fluids. So soon the two are meshed, the idea of the fluid as well as the life that they enjoy through this state of euphoria. And then they find that it takes more and more and more of the fluid to keep this happening. And then, without knowing it, they slip into the state where they realize that without it, their whole life is gray. But the only time their life takes on a rosy hue is when they have this fluid going. The same could be said, of course, of drugs and so on. All right. Now, if I might make the analogy to all of you, this is what has happened with your participating in the drama of the ego. You began by looking at it and participating partially in it and seeing it as a partial enjoyment, as an interesting adventure. But you participated too long, until such a point now where you cannot imagine a world that is not alive with the gray strands of your ego projection. You cannot envision it. Just as an alcoholic cannot imagine living without their substance, you cannot imagine that life exists without ego. I say to you that ego is nothing more than vodka in a glass. Life is flowing, and ego is addiction, my friend. Good for you. The attachment to ego is an addiction. And like all other addictions, you have to move out of the addiction. And how do I suggest it? By watching to see that it is an addiction. You do not think it is addiction. You think it is real. You think it is real. Ego responses are simply habits. addictions. There is another way to respond. There is another way to see, and you have forgotten. Just as the alcoholic cannot imagine living any other way, neither can you.
So you're telling us that we're addicted to fear.
You are addicted not only to fear, but you are addicted mostly to the movements of ego. All right, let's be very specific. When a drug addict takes a drug, they would not continue to take drugs if something didn't happen, if something in them didn't happen, if some change didn't take place. And thus it is with ego. You wouldn't continue on in your game of ego if there wasn't something happening in you, if you didn't feel some sensation. All right, now the sensations that you feel are those of emotion and those of mind. And these titillate you. These give you a feeling of life. They move. The webbing moves. And it is that movement of the web of mind and body that you are feeling that gives you a false sense of its life. You think it is alive because you feel it moving. But it is almost as if you had hung a net in the wind. And you see this wonderful breeze blowing through, and the net moves, and you think the net has life of its own, whereas actually the thing that is moving the net is the power of the wind, moving through the net. Do you understand? And this is the kind of vision. You see, the ego is ephemeral. The ego is not real. The ego is not real. You are addicted to its movements because they are the only movements that you have identified with. You have moved so far away from the vast, bold movements of the one self that you have taken now as a very mediocre substitute, the movements of the ego. You are looking for sensation. Do you understand me? I understand what you're looking for. You're looking for sensation, and you're looking for them in your mind and in your body, in your ego, all right? And I say, I understand that. But I'm telling you that there is another life that has a lot more power, a lot more boldness, a lot more dynamic creativity that stands right behind it, that is also moving. But since you're looking at the movements of the net in the wind, you're forgetting that it is the boldness of the divine breeze that moves the whole thing. Take your eye off the net. Put your eye in the space, and soon you will begin to feel the wonder of the divine moving through that webbing network of ego. Do you see? All you have to do is take your eye off of the web and put it in the space, and you are going to sense something very different. And then the web can do what it wants, the net can move, but you will know it for what it is. You will feel the sensation of the divine power. All you're wishing is to feel sensation. All I'm asking you is, the reason you're on the edge of the net is that you are afraid if you fall over, there will be no sensation. You are afraid that when you fall off, there will be nothing there. No feeling of life at all. And this is why I keep telling you. If you can finally understand that when you begin to feel dynamic life moving through you, you will see that it is not ego life. And you will make the choice instantly, harmoniously, and easily. All of my words are not going to convince you. It is an experimental object. You're looking for sensation. That's why you have fights. Life becomes boring. Let's have a fight. That's why you have love affairs. That's why you change jobs. That's why you move furniture. That's why you do everything. You want sensation, newness. Which brings me to what I think will be our final topic for the day, which is I would like for you to keep one thing in mind about ego. Ego is an accumulator. Ego accumulates. And the reason that you find a true seeker getting a life more and more and more simple simply means that their ego is choosing to accumulate less and less and less because there's more divine motion and less ego motion in their life. When you find yourself wanting to accumulate, ask yourself the question, who is accumulating this? The ego loves accumulation of mind, that means thought, ideas, intelligence, on the physical level, possessions, friends, money, whatever it is. I will just leave you with this one thought. Work with it in your daily life. When you are tempted to accumulate, ask yourself, why? Why are you choosing to accumulate? If you knew with your deep being that everything in the world was yours because you were all of the world, everything that every human being has is yours because you are living their life. You want a Cadillac? You've got a Cadillac. You want polio? You've got it. You want enlightenment? You've got it. Whatever you want, you already have, because you are participating in all of their lives. And there's nothing that your mind can conceive of that isn't already out there. And if it's out there, you've got it. You don't need anything. You don't need anything. You want a bold, wonderful husband who loves and adores you? Well, there's one out there somewhere. You want 18 children? There's many more than that out there. There's nothing, nothing that you do not have. So every time you decide to accumulate something, ask yourself, what is the premise that it's resting on? It's resting on the premise that you do not have it, that there is a lack in you. When you finally start to live this life, then you have touched on to one of the keys that is very often represented in religious understanding. For example, certain brands of religion say that there is no lack in the world, that if you want money, you can always have money. All you have to do is know that you can have money and it'll flow into your life. All right? Now, if it's true about money, it's true about cancer. It's true about poverty. It cannot only be true about money. If it is a law that you can have whatever you want, it means that everything you want is already available to you. And why is that? You can choose at any time to bring any parts of your being closer to you. You are all one being. Do you understand that? The entire world is one. And if you decide from point A, I want what is over there in point G, if you put your will and mind and energy on it, you will bring it to you. Why? Because it's you, and you will bring it towards you. And then it will manifest not only on point A, but also on point G. It will now be manifesting in two places. You are one. And just as you can move the pieces of furniture around here in one room, you can move all your energy fields around. You can pick and choose. And I say to you, my friends, it isn't the movement of the pieces of furniture that count. It is the space in which they sit that count. This is why I tell you that you have everything you want. There is nothing ever that you need because you've got it all. Think about that. Yes.
A time back, you made a statement that we're not little automatons moving along the path. There is something more than that, that we actually have some control over our lives.
If you want it.
If you want it. This is what you're saying at this time, is it possibly that in staying in moment-to-moment awareness, to see and know that we can move from point A to point G and back and draw these things and push them away, that really, it's not a chance game. It's not...
Very good. Follow it up. Excellent.
That it's not something that just happens and we're standing around watching it. That we are actually moving the pieces around.
Good. Excellent. Yes. You heard it. You see it. You hear it? Mm-hmm. It's true. Now, the reason I say that you have to watch first the webbing, the fat, gray strands of the web, instead of the vast open space, is that exactly what this gentleman is speaking about. When you know absolutely with assurance that ego can get you anything you want, that you have the power to get anything in this universe that you want, when you know that, when you no longer puel and whine and say, I don't have this, I don't have this, I need this, I was deprived of this, and all this pueling and whining going on, once you see that you have chosen to identify with a splintered little limitation, and that at the same time this splintered limitation can bring to it anything out of all of the other createdness that it wants, all the money, all the lovers, all the beauty, all whatever is your bag, if you know that you can bring any of those to you, then you'll finally say, phooey, I'm not interested anymore. But you see, most people have to go through that stage. They have to say, I see that I could do it, and I say, forget it. I'm not interested. I want the vastness that's coming through the holes. I don't want the webbing. Do you see the difference? And this is why I say you cannot jump over this step. You cannot just say, oh, there's a web, I'm going to leap over it. You have to take seriously these strands of the webbing until you understand them. That's all you need to do, is to understand them. You don't need to become them. You don't need to somehow... You see, the idea that is often represented is that you have to somehow be able to see the entire network of netting and experience every one of those strands, my friends. All you need to do is look with microscopic intensity at one pore on that net, and you will see the substance of which ego is made. And once you know that you have the power to control that small webbing, what you have done and what ego really is, you will decide to give it up. I cannot talk to you about that. You have to decide. Once you know that you have at your fingertips all that you want in the ego network, you will say, there's nothing in it that I want. But this idea that you don't have something is what keeps you yearning. This is why I say, I am very, very insistent that you think carefully about the fact that ego wants to accumulate. Because ego is based on the premise that there is something you do not have. And I am telling you that that is a lie. Even in the world of ego, you have all of it that you need. You can have all of the access to all of the manifestations of ego that have ever, ever come into form right now. You can begin to understand what I mean when you begin deep meditation. You will start to feel. You will find, for example, all right, let's talk about the historical happenings of the Buddha who sat and saw all of the things passing before him. And he was able to sit and watch. And it's that kind of thing that will begin to happen. You will start to see desires rising within you, and you will just watch them, and they will take form, and you will say, no thanks, and it'll die. And then another one will take form, and then it will die, and it'll get more and more subtle. And then one day, a wonderful master of light and beauty will stand before you, and you'll say, well, no thanks, and that's harder. But eventually, even that, why does that have to drop away? Can you answer?
Because you are the master.
Because even that subtlety is still a form of projection, and it is you. It is still a limitation. You see, it is not the totality.
So that's what you meant by using or accepting your own power.
Exactly. Because once you begin to see, you will just see it flow in. You will feel it. I'm not saying that all of you are going to run out and have 18,000 things happening at once. It's going to happen right before your eyes. Don't you understand? This is where it's happening, right here. You don't have to move out of your seat. But to have a thought come into your mind, you see, you still have a lag in your mind. You think that if you want something, you have to wait and then it'll happen to you. I tell you this, my friends. Let us say that your desire is to have a deep love affair, all right? You're sitting in your chair and you're saying, I don't have this deep love affair, but this Bartholomew character says that I can feel that energy. So you're just going to sit down. All we're talking about, my friends, is energy in motion. That's all you're talking about. And you sit down and you just begin to get deeply within your being, and up will arise this desire. And with the desire comes a fruition. Understand this. With desire comes a fruition. There are two sides of the coin. You cannot have the desire without having the fruition on the other side of it. So all you do is you look at it carefully, you will begin to see that that energy, by the very thought that you have had of wanting it, has brought the reality to you. I'm just throwing these out. Listen to me if you will, throw them away if you will. The very thought that you want something brings the answer and the fruition at the same moment. They are not separate. The desire and its fruition come at the same time. For those of you that doubt me, try it. You see, you're not taking yourself seriously. You're not giving yourselves power. You're not understanding what you are. I tell you, you are not who you think you are. Now, this is a very high-blown and lofty and difficult tape, and I'm well aware of it. But I tell you this. I throw these out. Pick them up if you will. I will tell you absolutely this, that which you want is already fulfilled. In the moment of wanting it, it is already fulfilled. I say this because the one obstacle to letting go of ego is you keep wanting things, and they get more and more subtle. And the last thing is, I want freedom. The fact that you want freedom has already guaranteed absolutely that you are free. I repeat, if you can envision the wanting for freedom, then you are free. There is nothing that you do not have. Nothing. I do not feel sorry for anyone. And it is because I do not feel sorry for anyone that I can love you. Because feeling sorry for someone means that I see them as limited. And I do not see you as limited. If you feel sorrow for yourself or for others, that means that you have bought the vast misunderstanding that you are limited. And if I could do one thing, it is that, is to take that veil and throw it away. You cannot find it out through words. You cannot find it out through mind. You can only find it out through experience. And you cannot experience it if you don't take the time to be serious about finding it. We go back where we began. Do you want freedom, or do you just want to think about freedom? There is a great deal of difference. You can accumulate knowledge about other people's freedom and call it your own freedom. Or you can put that all aside and say, I want it for myself. And I think this is a serious question that you should all ask yourself. Do you really want freedom, or do you simply want to think about it, to read about it, to pretend about it? And the answer to that lies in the amount of time that you spend in the moment being aware of your vastness, and the amount of time that you spend in your judgmental egos condemning others around you for their bad behavior that doesn't conform to your high standard of superiority. Don't you see? Where do you sit? So, in closing, I thank you for listening. I realize this has brought in new and perhaps very high-blown concepts. I ask those of you who have any belief at all in what I say to take them seriously. I do not ask you to believe them. I simply ask you to think about them. Take them into your being, roll them around inside, and see if you can find a point in you that agrees. See if you cannot find a point in you that expands just at the thought that you are living all of your lives now and everyone else's lives. Does this terrify you, or does this expand you? Does this outrage you, or does this delight you? What is your response? What is happening within you when you hear these outrageous statements? The only difference between you and any avatar is that they took these outrageous statements seriously and decided to find out if they were true, decided that they were worth more than living their mundane, ordinary lives in a mundane, ordinary pattern, and that they would do something else. That is the only difference. They didn't stop. They didn't quit. They weren't afraid to stretch past the horizon on into the infinite. And that is the only. So, I wish all of you good luck. I have never fooled you. I have never fooled you. I told you it would take all of you, all of your life, all of your energies,
all of your awareness. I have never fooled you. But I tell you this, if you do it, it can be done. It can be done. It can be done.